Today's reading begins in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 25. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 25. Now concerning the betrothed, I have no command from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned, and if a betrothed woman marries, she has not sinned. Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles, and I would spare you that. That is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none, and those who mourn as though they were not mourning, and those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing, and those who buy as though they had no goods, and those who deal with the world as though they had no dealings with it, for the present form of this world is passing away. I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord, but the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the unmarried or betrothed woman is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit, but the married woman is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this for your own benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your undivided devotion to the Lord. If anyone thinks that he is not behaving properly toward his betrothed, if his passions are strong and it has to be, let him do as he wishes. Let them marry. It is no sin. But whoever is firmly established in his heart, being under no necessity but having his desire under control, and has determined this in his heart to keep her as his betrothed, he will do well. So then he who marries his betrothed does well, and he who refrains from marriage will do even better. A wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. Yet in my judgment she is happier if she remains as she is, and I think that I too have the Spirit of God. Now concerning food offered to idols, we know that all of us possess knowledge. This knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. If anyone imagines that he knows something, he does not yet know as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, he is known by God. Therefore, as to the eating of food offered to idols, we know that an idol has no real existence, and that there is no God but one. For although there may be so-called gods in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is one God, the Father, from whom are all things and for whom we exist, and one Lord, Jesus Christ, through whom are all things and through whom we exist. However, not all possess this knowledge, but some, through former association with idols, eat food as really offered to an idol, and their conscience, being weak, is defiled. Food will not commend us to God. We are no worse if we do not eat, and no better off if we do. But take care that this right of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For if anyone sees you have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will he not be encouraged, if his conscience is weak, to eat food offered to idols? And so by your knowledge this weak person is destroyed, the brother for whom Christ died. Thus sinning against your brothers, and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never eat meat, lest I make my brother stumble. Am I not free? Am I not an apostle? Have I not seen Jesus our Lord? Are not you my workmanship in the Lord? If to others I am not an apostle, at least I am to you, for you are the seal of my apostleship in the Lord. This is my defense to those who would examine me. Do we not have the right to eat and drink? Do we not have the right to take along a believing wife, as do the other apostles and the brothers of the Lord and Cephas? Or is it only Barnabas and I who have no right to refrain from working for a living? Who serves as a soldier at his own expense? Who plants a vineyard without eating any of its fruit? Or who tends a flock without getting some of the milk? Do I say these things on human authority? Does not the law say the same? For it is written in the law of Moses, "You shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain." Is it for oxen that God is concerned? Does he not certainly speak for our sake? It was written for our sake, because the plowman should plow in hope, and the thresher thresh in hope of sharing in the crop. If we have sown spiritual things among you, is it too much if we reap material things from you? If others have this rightful claim on you, do not we even more? Nevertheless, we have not made use of this right, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ. Do you not know that those who are employed in the temple service get their food from the temple, and those who serve at the altar share in the sacrificial offerings? In the same way, the Lord commanded that those who proclaim the gospel should get their living by the gospel. But I have made no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing these things to secure any such provision, for I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. For I preach the gospel that gives me no grounds for boasting, for necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if not of my own will, I am still entrusted with a stewardship. What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel. For though I am free from all, I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews I became as a Jew, in order to win Jews. To those under the law I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I may share with them in its blessings. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air. But I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. So we've got a couple of different things contained within this reading. We had discussed in our previous reading, in chapter 7, building on what he stated in chapter 6 about sexual immorality and fleeing that sexual immorality. In chapter 7, he gave his teachings about some principles for marriage and how marriage allows us to have an outlet that solves some of our temptations regarding desires of the flesh. He also had addressed if someone had a spouse that was an unbelieving spouse, that they should stay with them and keep that marriage intact, if at all possible. Not giving laws regarding divorce, but merely instruction regarding staying and having an influence on an unbeliever. Where we started today, he gives some opinion. And this shows the character of Paul, in that he doesn't just give this instruction as if it came from Jesus. He clarifies that he gives some of his own opinions. Some people think that all of Paul's writings are his opinions, but this demonstrates that when he gives his opinion, he clarifies it as such. So basically he says there's going to be a lot of anxiety that comes upon a person if they are married. And if they do not marry, then they would be able to dedicate themselves fully to the Lord without any of that distraction. All of their anxiety would be on serving the Lord rather than on worldly things. But he also understands that this is not a teaching that everybody can accept. In chapter 8, he begins addressing the issue of food that is offered to idols. Knowledge, knowing that that fact that it was offered to idol doesn't mean anything if you are not worshiping that idol. Yet he also recognizes that people that come out of idolatry may have a conscience issue with this. So basically what he addresses is, you don't take your knowledge that it is nothing and then go and harm your brother or sister who came out of that idolatry and it is something to them. You don't harm their conscience and you don't make a stumbling block for them. And so he makes the statement at the end of this section in verse 13, if food makes my brother stumble, I'll never eat meat. That's the attitude of a Christian. Even though I have a right to this, even though I understand it properly, I'm not going to harm my brother or sister. I care more about them. Chapter 9, he begins to address the fact that apparently he and Barnabas were expected to have less support, basically, because they don't have a family. And he basically says, you know, we should have the same rights that everybody else does. But he also ties that together and makes the point he's not lobbying for more support, but he does want this understanding set in place so that they do understand properly. And he uses that as his jumping off point into making the point that he is very motivated to preach the gospel, and that is his sole motivation. His motivation is not money, it's to preach the gospel. And starting in verse 19, he even makes the point that, you know, my approach in preaching the gospel is modified based on who I'm trying to reach. Whether it be a Jew under the law, whether it be a Gentile outside the law, it didn't matter. He wanted to reach them, and so he would tailor that approach. Not changing the gospel, but simply approaching it differently. And so finally he gets down to verse 24, and he says, "Do you not know that in a race all runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it." Put the effort forward to win so that you may obtain it. He says, "I discipline my body, I keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified." He puts the effort necessary in order to be faithful, just as we should be putting the effort necessary to be faithful as well. Thank you for listening. Please continue in prayer that God may be with us all.